ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
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 श्रीमद् भागवतम् Translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Canto 6, Chapter 16, Text 38. Vishaya trisho narapashavo ya upasate vibhutena parang tvam I wonder if it should be chanted differently. Vishaya trisho narapashavo ya upasate vibhutena parang tvam Teshama shisha isha tadanu vinashanti yata rajakulam. Seems to be strangely split. Teshama shisha isha tadanu vinashanti yata rajakulam. Vishaya trusho narapashavoya. Upasate vibhutena parang tvam Teshama shisha isha tadano Vinashyanti yata rajakulam Translation O Lord, O Supreme Unintelligent persons who thirst for sense enjoyment and who worship various demigods are no better than animals in the human form of life. Because of their animalistic propensities, they fail to worship your lordship, and instead they worship the insignificant demigods who are but small sparks of your glory. With the destruction of the entire universe, including the demigods, the benedictions received from the demigods also vanish, just like the nobility when a king is no longer in power. Purport, Bhagavad Gita says, Kamais tais taya hritagyana prapadyante devataha. Those whose minds are distorted by material desires surrender unto the demigods. Similarly, this verse condemns worship of the demigods. We may show our respect to the demigods, but the demigods are not worshipable. The intelligence of those who worship the demigods is lost, hrita-gyanaha, because those worshippers do not know that when the entire material cosmic manifestation is annihilated, the demigods, who are the departmental heads of that manifestation, will be vanquished. When the demigods are vanquished, the benedictions given by the demigods to unintelligent men will also be vanquished. Therefore, a devotee should not hanker to obtain material opulence by worshipping the demigods, but should engage in the service of the Lord, who will satisfy all his desires. Akama sarvakamo va moksha kama udaradhihi. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Whether full of all material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, a person who has broader intelligence must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. This is the duty of a perfect human being, one who has the shape of a human being, but whose actions are nothing but those of an animal. It's called Narapashu or Dvipada Pashu, a two-legged animal. A human being who is not interested in Krishna consciousness is condemned herewith as a Narapashu. Chitraketu was a king, nothing very unusual in that, although it's a case of also of Manushanam Sahasreshu, or not even one among a thousand becomes a king, so a king is a very special person. There have been so many kings who have come and gone, but Chitraketu was special because he was a great devotee, and particularly his story is narrated. He was in the unusual circumstance of having 10 million wives, and none of them had children. Then he got a child, and the child died, gave him spiritual knowledge, which was supplemented by Narada, who became his guru, and then he became a great pure devotee to the extent that he's able to directly meet Lord Anantadev and glorify him. This prayer, this statement that we just read, is among the prayers of Chitraketu to Anantadev. So there you go. He's a king, had an amazing episode with his unexpected son. It was unexpected that he'd have a son. Well, first of all, he expected it, and then everyone became disappointed, so he didn't get his son. If you have 10 million wives, you should be able to get at least one son, but it didn't happen. And he got his son, he lost his son, the son came back to life and spoke spiritual knowledge, and, "Oh, my son," he said, "who are you? I'm your father." "Which father?" "I had so many fathers." So this was introductory spiritual knowledge given by the jiva in this, who had been in the body of that boy. Sri Jivova, we see it in the Bhagavatam, it refers to him as the jiva, speaks. And then Narad inspired him, and pure devotee, speaking with Nandadev directly, and so that's it, right? That's, and they all lived happily ever after. Nothing more to say. That's it. Another back to Godhead case. Well, not quite yet. There's another strange twist to the story to come. I think that's not enough excitement for one lifetime. There's more to come. There's a strange case of having a son, then losing the son, having the son come back to life, and then going in this very body to meet the Lord and offer prayers to him. But there's something that was all unimaginable, and there's another unimaginable episode to happen yet. In this verse, which was spoken by Chitraketu, he decries the position of humans who do not take worship, do not take shelter of and worship Krishna, but who worship the demigods for the fulfillment of material desires. It's a standard theme throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam, and as Srila Prabhupada also quotes from Bhagavad Gita also. Anya deva shrinai tomar ek ahinu bhai e bhakti paramakaran, and that's very much adapted into the canon of the Gauriya Vaishnavas. Narottam Das, I just quoted Narottam Das, sings, "To take shelter of other gods, or to not take shelter of other gods, I say to you, O brother, is the main cause of bhakti." Now, Chitraketu took this very seriously, maybe a bit too seriously, because he took the liberty to insult Shiva and Parvati to their face, not only to their face, when they were in the assembly of great saintly persons. After having direct audience of Ananta, Chitraketu continued to fly around the universe in his celestial airplane, and he happened to come to Mount Kailas, where he saw Lord Shiva. Now, he's spoken here about the demigods. They're destroyed. Their benedictions are destroyed with the destruction of the universe. They're insignificant. When he came to Shiva and Parvati, it stated about Chitraketu that he spoke some words to them. Specifically to Lord Shiva, that, you're such a great saintly person, but I find it very surprising that you're sitting here with your wife on your lap. That's very strange. And so he made a joke of that, as if Lord Shiva didn't know how to behave properly, or that Lord Shiva was somehow some kind of sense enjoyer, even though he's described here as Chitraketu describes him as Jotadharas Tivra Tapa. He's got his hair matted up. He's performed intense, fierce austerities. Srila Prabhupada describes Tivra Tapa. Highly elevated due to undergoing fierce austerities and penances. But he's got a woman, of course it's his wife, on his lap. Of course, a man with his wife may do that, but it's in an open assembly, with all saintly persons present. And there are some words stated here. He didn't know. He was unaware. Where is that? He was unaware of the prowess of Shiva and Parvati. So, where is that? That's stated. Anyway, somewhere here it's stated. He was unaware of their prowess, and thus he spoke to them like that. So he didn't realize that Shiva and Parvati, they're called demigods, but they're really in a different category. Lord Shiva's in a different category, and his wife is therefore also. They're so powerful. Lord Shiva is just practically the same as Lord Vishnu in many ways. And Parvati, she is Shushti Stiti Pralaya Sadhana Shaktire Ka Chayeva Yasya Bhuvanani Vibharti Durga. She acts as the shadow of the Supreme Lord. So he didn't know their potency, and he openly joked with them. Maybe we can only speculate that he was feeling that he's... I already spoke directly with God, so I can say anything about Lord Shiva's on a lower level. What was in his mind? It's very difficult to say. Shiva didn't take any offense. He just went on sitting there. Parvati became very upset. In one of the purports in this section, Srila Prabhupada writes that this demonstrates that even at that level, up to the level of Shiva and Parvati, that the understanding of a woman is never as good as the understanding of a man. In other words, Parvati, her understanding was not correct. She should have followed Lord Shiva and all the other saintly persons who just sat there and they didn't say anything. It was a social gaffe, you could say. It's not really the proper etiquette. You come into the assembly of Lord Shiva with all saintly persons sitting there, all very respectful to him, and you start making comments about Lord Shiva's behavior being improper. And that's what Parvati said. He said, all the great saintly persons here, Lord Brahma, he never said anything. Kapila never said anything. None of the, and who does this person think he is? Is he, does this Chitraketu think that he's become Yamaraj and he's been appointed to come here and punish us? So then she cursed him that you'd better go and take birth as a demon so that you won't get the opportunity to make such offenses again. Now you may think, well, demons, they'll always make offenses like that one. That's what they do. I've just been hearing this section and I've been thinking about it. How is a, well, yeah, demons are offensive by their nature toward devotees, but generally they won't be in the association of devotees. They'll live in their own society. So they won't get the opportunity. Chitraketu, he came into the association of Lord Shiva. He was allowed to. That means that there must have been so many guards. And it's not that anyone can just walk into Lord Shiva's audience. He was allowed to, but he misused that opportunity. He was judged as such by Parvati. But if he was a demon, he wouldn't have been allowed in. Even though Lord Shiva is the oversees the very ghastly class of people, but in that particular assembly, they're not allowed in. Lord Shiva was speaking among saintly persons. So when Lord Shiva is with the ghosts and the lowest class of people, it's understood his position in relationship to them. They're very respectful to him. So if he's in the form of a demon, they're also respectful to Lord Shiva, although they may not be respectful to other devotees of the Lord. So he was cursed for his offense. That's right, isn't it? He was cursed because of his offense. Well, maybe, maybe not. If it was actually an offense, what's the effect of Vaishnava Aparada? It destroys your bhakti. Bhakti can never be fully destroyed, but it has the effect to, as if to destroy it. It means that it may be severely, adversely affected for many, many lifetimes. But we see that Chitraketu, who became Vritra, even though he was in the form of a demon, and he executed the activity of a demon, which was to attack Indra. But he was in very pure consciousness. The prayers that he offers are some of the, even in the Srimad Bhagavatam, some of the sweetest prayers. He prays for association devotees. He prays his attitude towards his worshipable Lord, just like the little chicks in the nest. They always hanker that when will my parents, the birds, come back and give me food. So in the same way, he wants to have that feeling toward the Lord. He's in very pure consciousness. He never lost that consciousness. So could it be an offense? Did he actually make an offense? The actual effect of an offense would be much worse than getting the form of a demon. The actual effect of an offense would be that one's whole attitude in bhakti would be transformed. And one offense leads to more offense. Unless one very quickly tries to extinguish that or become free from that effect. So that leads to the question then, what does constitute an offense to a Vaishnava? Generally we think if the person takes it as an offense, that's an offense. There are two ways we consider. If a person takes it as an offense, it's an offense. Or if it's intended as an offense, it's an offense. Otherwise, it's not always, if one says something bad to a Vaishnava, that it's an offense or behaves in an apparently adverse manner. We find that Arjuna was sometimes joking with Krishna in a manner to insult him, as friends, especially of Kshatriya nature, they may do. They may, what's called in English, rib each other. Ribbing means to put your elbow in their rib. So you may do so verbally also. It's to, hey Yadava, ah Yadava, you're a Yadava. I'm a Pandava, Kuru, you're the lower caste. You're a Yadava. Arjuna lamented that I used to speak with you like this, and make fun of you, mock you. But that was done as friends. That nourishes their friendship when it's done. That familiarity nourishes the friendship. Mother Yashoda tied up Krishna to punish him. And that's not an offense. But when Duryodhana wanted to tie up and capture Krishna, that's an offense. So it may be the attitude of the performer, or it may be even the performer doesn't have that attitude, but the person becomes offended. There's an anecdote related in Sri Bhakti Ratnaka of Rupa Goswami Prabhupada meditating on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Within his transcendental mind's eye, seeing some funny pastime and laughing. It happened that some devotee who was physically crippled at that time was in the presence of Rupa Goswami. Rupa Goswami was not aware of this because he was deeply absorbed in meditation on the pastimes of Radha and Krishna. But that deformed devotee thought that Rupa Goswami was laughing at him for his deformed appearance. And that devotee became offended. That Rupa Goswami is offending me. He's making fun of my physical appearance. Now that devotee must have been extremely neophyte to think that Rupa Goswami would be on such a low platform of consciousness that he would laugh at him for that. And that wasn't Rupa Goswami. He wasn't even aware that that devotee was present. But what happened then, that scene of the pastimes broke. And Rupa Goswami was not able to again bring back in his mind the vision of Radha and Krishna. And he wondered, well, what happened? Why have Radha and Krishna removed their mercy from me that I can no longer behold these pastimes? And eventually he came to understand because this devotee had become offended. Who is this neophyte devotee that by that offense, which wasn't an offense, if anything, you might think it was the neophyte devotee's becoming offended was an offense. How can Rupa Goswami make an offense? He's worshipable on the level of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He's the acharya of all the acharyas in our Gaudiya Sampradaya, Rupanuga Sampradaya. But nevertheless, that anecdote is recounted in the Bhakti Ratnaka. There's an instruction there that even we should be so afraid of making offenses. Chitraketu wasn't afraid. Maybe he thought that, well, I'm on the level of Lord Shiva, so I can joke with him. Practically, he was. We should be cautious of making psychological analyses of the great devotees. But how did this happen? Parvati felt offended. That, how are you insulting my husband like this? But Srila Prabhupada comments that, well, she shouldn't have thought like that. Her husband didn't become upset. Then why should she become upset? But then you may say, well, my husband is very tolerant, but it's my duty to And there's so many different considerations, this way, that way. How can we understand what's going on here? Demonstrated the great quality of the Vaishnavas, that Parvati herself was astonished when Chitraketu was cursed, and then he descended from his airplane, came down, bowed down to her and said, "Okay, that's what you want, all right. You cursed me, I accept it." Addressing her as mother. Not in the slightest bit disturbed. "Now you have to become a demon." "Okay." Not disturbed. She became astonished. How can he be so undisturbed? It's just like if someone, you're sitting in a room and someone runs in with an axe to attack you and kill you, and you can become disturbed, right? And you just sit there and say, "Huh, have a nice day." And then you'd be surprised. Why is he not disturbed? You get unexpectedly, without any prior notice whatsoever, all of a sudden, you have to become a demon. Not in the slightest bit disturbed. And Lord Shiva said, "Well, you see, Vaishnavas are like that. They're like that. Just see, that's what a Vaishnava is." Because Lord Shiva, all this time, had been telling Parvati about the Vaishnavas. See, that's what a Vaishnava's like. They don't mind anything. They're not disturbed by anything. Narayana parasarve nakutaschina bhibhyati swagapavaga narakeshma pituliyarta darshanaha. Those who are actually attached to Lord Narayana, they're never disturbed or upset or any such thing by any condition. They see heaven, hell, liberation. It's all the same. They're so detached from this material world that wherever they go, they whatever situation they're in, they'll glorify Krishna. So Parvati was surprised. She may have heard that from Lord Shiva before, but to actually see it, it's surprising. Just like we've heard now this narration of Chitraketu. But if we actually see a devotee who's not in the slightest bit disturbed, we become surprised, because it's so unusual. I think I was here before also, I narrated. It's not so well known in our movement, but one of the senior members of our movement, Bhakti Raghav Swami, that many years ago, you may have seen him, he has one leg. Previously he had two legs, or one and a half legs, because the one leg wasn't properly formed or whatever. So he used to walk with a limp. So one time there was an attack on the Mayapur temple. You can't imagine nowadays, but it was just not many devotees living there. And it was just at night, many times there had to be any light whatsoever. There was an attack. And he went, some dacoits came and they stole the small deities of Radha and Krishna. Maybe someone had told them, or they thought they were made of gold or whatever, they came and took them. So he went to the temple when he heard there's an attack going on. And what can he do? One man. What can he do to stop them? But anyway, he went and they threw a bomb and his leg got blown off and he was sitting in a pool of blood. And devotee, the attackers ran away and they came and they found him sitting in a pool of blood chanting Hare Krishna. And he never complained, "Oh, I lost my leg." He never attempted to get any glorification from it. He just, okay. He never made an issue of it in the slightest bit. It happened, that's all. So if we hear it, we may become surprised. What would be your reaction if all of a sudden you had a bomb thrown at you and your leg blown off? What would you think? Never said a word, never complained, never wrote an article about how great I am because I had my leg blown off. Just went on with life as if nothing had happened. Of course, he had to go to hospital and this and that. So it's surprising that people can be so detached from the body. We hear about it all the time. How many times have you heard we're not the body? How many times? But to actually act as if one is not the body, to be detached from it, we become surprised if someone is actually detached from the body and not attached to clinging on to life, just not disturbed. So even Parvati became surprised, and she sees everything that's going on. She is the material energy. She sees that, so it must be a rare thing. We don't see many people like that. So she became surprised. So Chitraketu became a demon for his offense. But it wasn't an offense. Was it an offense? Parvati took it like that. And then Prabhupada writes that, well, her understanding was wrong. And who's going to criticize Parvati? Whew. Better be careful here. But we can't criticize her, but we should read what's in the purport, what Srila Prabhupada has given, following the previous acharyas. So what are we to understand from all this? All I can say is it's very mysterious what's going on here between the great devotees. To understand exactly how and why should Chitraketu become a demon? Well, there's also he demonstrates the principle that even if one is in such a situation, one could still be a devotee of Krishna. Even someone born as a demon, Prahladas Chasmi Daityanam, the great example is Prahlad, born in a family of demons. His father was a great demon. His son was a great demon. His brothers were demons, but he wasn't a demon. He was a great devotee. So later his grandson, Bali Maharaj, also demonstrated that principle. Even though he acted as a demon by attacking the demigods, but later he surrendered everything to Vishnu. And here we have Vritra, who acted completely as a demon in attacking Indra. But by his attitude, that saying, well, look, you know, we're here to fight, let's fight, and anyway, you're going to kill me, so why don't you do it? He said to Indra, just do it. Just, okay, I gave you a good fight, now you have to kill me, and do it as quick as you can, because I want to go back to Godhead. So, completely undisturbed that I'm in this situation. Okay, I was born in a situation where I'm supposed to attack Indra. All right, I'll do it, but he's not particularly interested in what he's doing. He did it just like his duty, that did it with all force and energy. But his real interest is in Krishna. And then he went back to Godhead. So, very strange case, how he's some apparently mundane king in this strange situation. He has no children. He got a child, and the child was poisoned and died and came back to life again. And then Chitraketu was flying around in a celestial airplane and worshipped Ananta, and then got cursed by Parvati and became a demon. how to understand all the different nuances in this, but the point that's being demonstrated here is the power of Bhagavad Bhakti. Due to devotion to the Lord, even if one... First of all, one shouldn't be offensive to Lord Shiva. One should understand the position of Shiva and the demigods and Narayana. They're not all on the same level, but one shouldn't be offensive to them. But if one is very strong in bhakti, then nothing can impede his bhakti. Even if he's born among demons, no good association, if one has very strong conviction, one can remain a devotee in all circumstances. Now we may say that, well, Chitraketu, he is so strong in bhakti that even though he was cursed, he didn't lose his bhakti. But it seems that Rupa Goswami, he's got to be, of course, we're not saying Chitraketu's lacking in anything, but Rupa Goswami's on the highest of the high levels. And then how was it that his vision of Radha and Krishna was obstructed? Well, it's not there's no question of Rupa Goswami losing his bhakti. But the point is being demonstrated that how careful one has to be to avoid Vaishnavaprah. Then you may think, well, just don't associate with anyone, because you might, just like Rupa Goswami, he wasn't even associating with that crippled devotee. He wasn't associating with him. He didn't even know he was there. So you may say, well, just go away and live in a hut somewhere and don't interact with anyone, just in case you make offenses. Jad Bharat was something like that. He didn't want to interact with anyone because he thought, it's too dangerous. I might lose my bhakti again. So I'll be in this world and just live out my life until I die and not interact with anyone. So what to do? We can't stop acting. We have to act in this world. We have to try to avoid offense. At the same time, we have the mandate to preach Krishna consciousness, which means to distinguish reality from illusion for the benefit of all. And most people in this world, they don't want to. They're not interested in having reality distinguished from illusion. They're quite happy in their perverse way with the illusion. They don't want to be told they're in Maya, they're all nonsense, which is a fact. But if you... then how can you tell them without disturbing them? Or maybe you don't tell them, or you... what do you do? But if you don't tell them... if you don't tell them, they won't know, and they'll lose the opportunity of their human form of life. So in that way, you'll be doing them a great disservice. If you do tell them, they may become upset. And you may think, well, you made an offense. You see, they became upset, and then they went away from Krishna consciousness. But if you don't tell them about Krishna consciousness, they won't go away from it. So what's better? If you tell them about Krishna consciousness, they might go away, which means they go further away from Krishna consciousness. And so don't tell them, and then they won't go away. So they'll be in the zero position. And if you smile at them, and they may smile at you, and then in a future life, because they did a little agyata sukriti, in a future life they may be more ready to hear. But again, in the future life, if you tell them, if you're not sure, they're not quite ready, then they may go further away again. So what to do? Preaching is a risk. Preaching is a risk. We risk offending others. But actually to speak what people need to hear, even though they may feel offended. Cannot be considered an offense. But it could be also, if someone speaks the right thing, but in an attitude, just like, I'm a great preacher, I'm going to deliver these rascals and fools. It can be that someone takes them at the mandate to preach Krishna consciousness to boost their own ego. So that also, then that becomes offensive. So all in all, everything is very, if we get into human psychology, it's very, very, very complex. But there's no need to go into it so very, very deeply. Just understand the basic principles. We can't understand the human psychology to great depth. The modern psychologists, they try to understand, but the mind of even one person is very, very, very complex. So some basic principles we may understand and try to apply them in our lives. And chant Hare Krishna, deal with others in a manner that they may be benefited in Krishna consciousness. And exactly what they understand, how they behave, if they understand or misunderstand us, we can be sensitive to that. But we ourselves, it's not. We can't become overly mental about what others say. Oh, if I say this, they might misunderstand it, so better say it in another way, and then we become all tied up in this diplomatic knot of trying to behave with others. And to some extent we do. We're not just completely blunt. But a Vaishnava is simple. And as much as chants Hare Krishna, tries to convey Krishna consciousness to others, hopes that others will reciprocate in that spirit, and the rest is up to Krishna. How could Chitraketu have imagined that? What from his perspective was some good-natured joking with Lord Shiva, although it was a bit off, it seems. It was just not really the right thing to do. He couldn't have imagined that he would have been cursed to be take the form of a demon. Presumably he wouldn't have done so, but if he had thought, but he didn't, and then took the form of a demon. So who knows what will happen? At any moment, we can't imagine what will happen. Our life may be going on, all of a sudden something just changes it dramatically. So we have to be prepared for that also. By hearing Bhagavatam, we learn how to live in this world, this very strange world, Keshava, Tua, Jagat, Vichitra, is a very strange world, and learn how to live as a Vaishnava. What is a Vaishnava? Well, a Vaishnava is one who surrendered to Krishna, but exactly how we have to live in this world, what Krishna as in store for us, this is very difficult to say. Cannot say. What will happen exactly? How to understand all these lessons of Bhagavatam? We can try and analyze, but ultimately, bhaktya bhagavata grahyam na buddhya na chatikaya. Ultimately, Bhagavatam is revealed to us, the message of Bhagavatam, by our bhakti, or by the, not simply by intelligence, trying to make some psychological analysis, or even by studying the purports of the acharyas. The commentaries of the acharyas. How much can we understand? It's unlimited. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Krishna Tula Bhagavat Bibhu Sarvashroy Prati Shloke Prati Akare Nana Artha Khoi. He said that the Bhagavatam is absolutely just like Krishna. It's all powerful, can give shelter, all shelter. In every verse, in every syllable, there's so many meanings there. We see that even though Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's the all-knowing personality of Godhead, when he explained the Atma Rama verse to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he explained it in 18 unprecedented ways, which astonished Sarvabhauma, who had himself explained it according to his superhuman intelligence. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya is Brihaspati, so he had superhuman intelligence. But he was astonished by the explanations of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then later, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Goswami said, "Oh, I heard you explain the Amarama verse in 18 ways to Sarvabhauma. Could you tell me that?" And he said, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, "Actually, I forgot. I don't remember now what I said, but anyway, I'll give it a try." And so he started explaining, and he came up with how many? 63? Explanations. And then finally he said that, well, actually there are millions. He said, I told 18 at that time, but in your association, Sanatan, I'm getting more inspiration. Or 61, something like that. I'm getting more inspiration, and so many more meanings are coming. So by discussing in the association of devotees, then more and more Krishna will reveal himself. Krishna is unlimited. Krishna can reveal himself more and more and more. I'm supposed to be explaining this, but I must say I'm also mystified. What's going on in this pastime? It's all I can say is ascharyamana. It's amazing. Some idea we can get. Definitely the supremacy of bhakti. How bhakti is the pure devotion that overrides everything. Chitraketu was never became a demon, only outwardly. Parvati had no power to curse him to actually become a demon in the sense of dambho darpo vimanas cha krodha parasham evacha agyanam cha bhijatasya partha sambadam asurim. She had no power. She has the whole power over the whole material energy, but she has no power to curse a great pure devotee like Chitraketu to actually become a demon. He was born as a demon superficially, but actually to be a demon means to have the pride, conceit, arrogance, envy, harsh speech, ignorance. She couldn't put that on him. So superficially he took the form of a demon, but he was never a demon. So if we discuss, then more and more insights will come. And at the end of all the insights, we simply offer our respect to Krishna, unlimited Krishna, Ananta. These prayers are offered to Ananta, unlimited Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Does anyone have any other thoughts or questions to add to this discussion? Is that, yeah, please.
In our society, there is some kind of a ethos that one should not correct devotees on the fear of offenses. Like,
one should not correct others due to fear of offenses. Then if you don't correct them, then how will they grow? Then there should be no gurus? Then there's no distinction between proper behavior and improper behavior. It becomes a dilemma, that we should not make offense. But then, by correcting others. But if you don't correct, then you're not serving them properly. Guru nasasyat, swajano nasasyat, pita nasasyat, janani nasasyat, daivang natatsyam, napatischa sansyat. Namochya dya samapetu mrityam. If you can't deliver your dependent from birth and death, then don't become a guru. Don't become a relative. Don't become a father or a mother. Don't accept any honor from anyone. Don't exist. Everyone has the responsibility to try to help others. Unless you can deliver them from birth and death. So it's the duty of everyone to do that. That means telling them, this is right, this is wrong, what you're doing is wrong. If they don't accept, then you can't help, but at least you have to do your duty. Then you come to Mayavad, everything's all the same, whether you follow or don't follow, proper behavior, improper behavior, all becomes the same. There are so many ways to follow Prabhupada, so you can just imagine something to be following. The injunctions of Shastra, even such grave ones as not making an offense, can be misused also. This is one that, as you have mentioned it, I also perceive it to be a much misused Vaishnava principle, to not make offenses. So in the name of that, so much nonsense is being tolerated. In fact, I believe that this is being so much propagated because certain people have an agenda to propagate nonsense and not be taken to task for doing so. Is it an offense to say that? Well, some people would say so. What constitutes an offense? Lord Shiva didn't think that Chitraketu made an offense. Parvati did. Who's right? Ultimately, Krishna knows. But we can't stop acting for fear of making an offense. That would also be an offense. That would be ignoring the instruction of our guru. Arjuna was in that situation. If I fight, I'll make an offense. But if he hadn't fought, he would have made a bigger offense of disobeying Krishna. He thought it'd be an offense for me to attack Bhishma, but Bhishma would have been much more upset with him if he hadn't attacked him. Bhishma and Drona. They were happy that Arjuna was attacking them. They expected it, but if he hadn't attacked them, they'd have been really upset with him and would have probably cursed him. Otherwise, they're quite happy to be attacked by him. They didn't expect anything less from him. He thought it's an offense, but so that becomes a lose-lose situation from Arjuna's point of view. And then Krishna told you, do it for me. Then there's no offense. So that clears everything. Krishna te kila cheshta. You do everything on behalf of Krishna, and then it's up to Krishna. Then it's all his responsibility. That doesn't mean we should do all foolish things or things for our own sense gratification or self-aggrandizement and say, I'm doing it for Krishna. But if we actually do everything for Krishna, which means we should act intelligently also, not that, well, I'm going to build an atomic bomb and blow up all the demons for Krishna. That's not a very intelligent proposition. At some point in the history of this earth, it might be. But definitely not at the present time, in any part of the world. So, acting for Krishna means, if we're actually sincere to act for Krishna, then Krishna will give us the intelligence how to do so properly. Exactly what's the fallout of that, we'll have to see. Krishna doesn't act in stereotype ways. We may think, okay, I'll serve Krishna, I'll do it. You do everything completely sincerely, and it becomes what appears to be a big mess. That's what happened with the Pandavas. Yudhishthira gambled. He thought, well, I'm bound to by duty. It became a complete mess. Krishna had his plan. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.